Thanks for tuning into the 20-somethings podcast. The message you're about to listen to is part of a message series on biblical finances. We believe the Bible has so many important things to say about how we steward our money for God's glory. Now, to be clear, we are not offering up professional financial advice in these messages. We're not claiming to be financial professionals, but rather we just want to look at Scripture and see how we can use our money for God's glory and look at what the Bible's wisdom is for this topic. So with that, let's dive in to some biblical wisdom of how we can use our finances and our treasures all for the glory of God. Let's listen in.
We're going to start with the table talk, and I don't know if you can read it, so I'll drag it over. So on your tables, I want you to first of all talk about this. And before you start, I want to kind of preface it a little bit. The question says, does the way I steward or care for all the stuff God has trusted to my hands that He's given me, am I doing it in such a way that it gives God glory? If you've been around church very long, and if somebody's in the room that's not a believer, y'all was coming in, you're like, I just thought we were going to talk about finances. You're welcome. We are going to talk about finances. But because we're talking inside of a church, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that if you are a believer in this room, your number one job from the day you take a confession of faith until Jesus calls you home, your job is to give God glory, to show God to the world, right? So here's a question for you. We're getting to the table talk. I haven't forgotten it. If you close your eyes for a minute and think of your personal space, I don't know, it might be a bedroom, it might be a house, it might be an apartment, whatever it is, your living room. Think of your personal space as you left it this morning. If someone were to walk into your personal space right this minute, would they look around and say, this is someone who loves God? What's on your walls? What's on the floor? Now, don't come into my personal space, because you'd be like, that girl doesn't even do her dishes. Because I struggle with dishes. I don't like them. I have to work at that. I was never a very good wife. Okay. The reason I ask you that is because we are going to talk about stuff tonight. And nowhere, you will nowhere in the Bible find a scripture that you can proof test and say, aha, that's where it's at. It is laced throughout Scripture, most of it in Proverbs, but it does tell us consistently, persistently, that everything we have has been given to us by an almighty God who loves us. And it's not our stuff. We like to think it's ours. That's my bed, that's my car, that's my coffee pot. But it's not our stuff. We are stewards of this stuff. And therefore, what we do with it, how we care for it, how we manage it, is something that ought to be giving God glory. So here's my table talk question for you. Among your table, share a description of someone that you thought was particularly godly that's been in your life. But don't tell me their characteristics of their personality. Describe what they looked like on the outside. What type of clothes did they wear? Did they show up on time for meetings? I've done this multiple times with groups, by the way. You're not my first group to have this conversation. And always what comes out is these people were, I'm going to use the word moderate. They weren't flashy. They weren't maybe the most popular people. They didn't have the fanciest car. Most of them were steady, consistent, responsible, calm. Anybody sound, does that sound familiar? See, what I think goes on, and of course I'm not God, so I don't know, but Scripture says, as a man is in his heart, so is he. I paraphrase. And I think what happens is, as we get closer and closer to God, we become more orderly people. Does that make sense? My dishes notwithstanding, most of my life is pretty orderly, modest, you know what I mean? I mean, I might have a big mouth and I might crack big jokes, but in general, I don't have a flashy life. Now, I might not be all that godly to you. Maybe you're like, oh, look into her. But my point is still the same. Our hearts inside begin to evidence on the outside. You with me? It happens not just in our clothing or in our demeanor, but it happens with everything that God gives us. and you can give a pretty good guesstimate of where you are in your faith journey if you can look at, how am I managing the stuff God trusted? Do I even think it's His stuff, or am I still thinking it's my stuff? All right. We're going to talk about three different areas tonight, and I'm not going to have time to get through anything in as much detail as I would like. But we are going to do math. I know, math. Some of you are like, oh my God, I'm running for the door now. I have a stomachache. I got to leave. Math is not tonight like differential equations. We're not doing that. Okay. This is grade school math. Can you add and subtract? Can you go, that number is bigger than that number? Okay, this is the math we're going to do tonight. And I want to tell you, I make it sound, you know, petty, like it's grade school math. But do you know most people cannot balance their checkbook? Your stuff, my stuff, everybody's stuff, believer stuff, non-believer stuff, is going to get really kind of into three broad categories tonight, because I have the microphone. I get to say that. Inexpensive stuff is stuff that's easily replaced. And when I say that, everybody has a different number of zeros of what means inexpensive. When I was in my 20s, like $20 was expensive. And my dad told me, he goes, well, you'll get to a point where it'll be 200. And then eventually it'll be 2,000. And then as you get older, it'll be 20,000. Well, I'm not at 20,000, let me tell you. 20,000 is a lot of money for me. 2,000 is still kind of a lot of money. But you know, I can come up with $20 today. $20 is not a problem for me. Okay, so the amount of what's inexpensive is going to change as you get older and get more wealth. But in general, what I'm talking about is stuff that you're going to have many, many times in your life. How many pairs of jeans you're going to own in your life? Those are inexpensive and replaceable, right? How many coffee pots you're going to have? Jane, where are you? How many coffee pots do you suppose you've owned over your life? 10, right? They wear out, they die, they break. You cuss them first thing on Tuesday morning because it broke and it's not working. Y'all aren't a generation of coffee people. Us older people are like, coffee. Okay, so easily replaced. Clothing, household items, right? The next set is stuff that, it's got some more zeros. If you're going to replace that bad boy, you got to kind of plan around it, save it up. It might even have maintenance costs attached to it. The two biggest things you'll ever have like that in your life is your car and a house. Now, if you don't own a house today, don't worry about it. You don't have to own a house today. But I'm going to teach you a little bit about how loans work, and that's the math part, okay? Because you've got to know what's going on with interest rates for the things you're paying for on time. It's easy to look at the payment and not go, how much is that really costing me? And you've got to be able to do a little math to figure it out. Those things require budgeting, saving, replacing. The bottom one are the things you only ever get once in your life. You're never, ever going to replace it. Never. You know what that is? That body you're walking around in. It's the only one you're ever going to get. You know what else? The spouse you marry. That's the only one you're ever going to get. God willing, right? How about your mom or your dad? Whether you love them or you hate them, they're the only ones you're ever going to get. So we're going to talk a little bit about what are we doing with the things God has trusted us. Okay? Good? All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about... Now, here's where I really get non-biblical, and y'all have to bear with me. When I was in my 20s, coming out of my undergraduate degree, you got to understand, my daddy was a mechanic. So he wore overalls and grease rags. And my mom was a teacher, but she wasn't exactly a very fashionable person. And I tried to go out of college and work in a white-collar world, and I had no idea what clothing I was supposed to wear. Because all I ever saw were jeans and T-shirts. So, honestly, let me give you a couple of rules about clothing. You need to dress at the level of the person you're going to interview with, or one step down. If you're going to go on a date with somebody, you better have some idea of what level of clothing they generally wear. Because if you show up in all your cut up jeans and they're in a nice outfit, you know what? It's not going to go well. I wish we did not judge each other from the outside. God doesn't judge us from the outside. I want to be very clear about that. God does not judge us from the outside. But we live and breathe and work among human beings. And we as human beings are bitter judgers. We are terrible about it. And so I will give you an example on clothing. I was teaching in a university, and they did this study. And they didn't do it with women. They did it with men. But with the men, they showed these three young ladies. And they were all beautiful young ladies. They were all good looking. But one of them was dressed pretty much like, you know, leaking and cheeking, right? And one of them was dressed sort of like a runway model, very haute couture. And the other one was sort of your modest everyday girl, dressed, everything matched and everything fit, you know? And they asked these young men, which of these would you take out on a date? Do you know what they all said? The cheek and leak girl. And I was like, why would they say that? Well, because I'm not a guy. So one guy had to clue me in. He's like, you got a chance with her. I was like, oh, my lands. Right? Because of the way she was dressed. Then when they asked them, which one you take home to meet your mom, they didn't pick the haute couture girl. They didn't pick the cheek and leak girl. They picked the modest girl. So I'm going to tell you that people do judge you, and we judge each other. And if you're going to say, I want to be married to somebody that's at this level, they work like this, they look like this, you're going to have to step up your game to be there. Or if you go, well, not that one, I want like this, then you've got to shift your game to be there. You see what I mean? Because nobody's going to look at you and go, that's fine. If you ain't looking fine, like they looking fine. You see what I'm saying? Y'all all laughing at me like I'm saying something stupid. Okay, work is the same way. Okay, if I'm interviewing somebody to come work at my company, and they come schlepping in, and they've got cut up jeans, and their grammar is atrocious, you cannot work for me. I speak to people regularly that are in high-powered jobs, and I have to have people that get on the phone that can speak to people in good grammar, proper language, and don't let the F-bomb come out of their mouth. Right? So right now, it seems like it must be the season. I see a lot of things about how to interview, the five questions you should never answer like this or whatever on the internet. I don't know what all those people are saying. All I can say is this. If you come to interview at my shop, you better be dressed pretty tidy, and you better have good manners, and you better have good grammar. Because that's what I'm looking for. That's what I expect you to exhibit when you get on the phone at my shop. That's the same way elsewhere. I will still, to this day, if I have to go to a social event, I always ask, what's the dress code? People sometimes think you're just supposed to know. You don't know, right? You get an invitation to a party, and I say, yes, I'd like to come, but what's the dress code? It's a perfectly good question. Nobody's going to think you're a, you know, country rube because you didn't know what the dress code was. Always ask. Why? Because they'll tell you, business casual. Oh, it's, you know, dressy, dinner dressy. They'll tell you. And if you don't have any idea what that is, Google knows everything. You can go Google business casual men, and it will show you pictures, and you go, I'm going to look like that. That's what I need to look like. My son came to work for me recently because he's my business succession plan. And I said to him, well, we've got to go to this conference, and you need to be dressed in business casual. And he's like, well, what is that? And I said, you're a grown adult male. Go Google it and come appropriately dressed. Why do I have to tell you what clothes to put on? And he said, well, you're my mom. It's a good thing he's my family. He came with appropriate clothing, right? And he's never asked me again. Every time I say to him, this is not business casual, this is full business, he just shows up with appropriate clothing, because he only had to make a stupid mistake around me once, and he's like, okay, that don't fly. With my mom, it would fly. With my boss, not so much. You got it? It'd be rough to work for me if you're my family, wouldn't it? Okay, so you've got to know. Ask. Dress at their level. Well, what's one level down? So let me give you a little help with that. If you know the guy or gal that you're going to be as in a full business suit, you are either in a full business suit or you are one step down. Well, what's one step down? For most men, that means you at least have a tie on. It may mean a sweater over the tie, or it may mean a jacket that you can take off. The thing that I loved about men's clothes that I hate about women's clothes is, men's clothes, you can take the jacket off and it steps you down a notch. Then you take the tie off and you're down another notch, right? Girls don't have jackets and ties and things like that. We're either like here, or so it's a little harder for girls. Girls, I'll tell you, you know, used back in the day, full business dress, you had to wear pantyhose. Yeah, who wears pantyhose today? So you got to think, what are you putting on and what do you look like? Full business dress today is still heels, hose, a business suit that's a dress for girls. I know, you hate it, but if you're going to step into the world of business, you have to be able to dress appropriately. Now, it's gotten way more casual than when I was your age. When I was your age, it was a lot more formal. And today, when I ask who's going to be there, how are they going to be dressed, even when it's attorneys, I often know they're not going to be in full business regalia. Used to, there wasn't an attorney worth his salt that would walk out without a suit, jacket, tie on. But today, they're a little more relaxed. But I still will ask because I want to be at their level. They're never going to want to do business with me or do business with my company if I'm not at their level. Make sense? Okay, this is not about God. It's about honoring what God has trusted you with, and that is your image among the non-believers. If you're running around with cheek and leek, you're not in any way saying, I serve a God that is worth your time and energy. And I say that about boys too, because I've seen boys running. I've seen anybody in a runner. I've seen runners out there, and I'm like, wow, y'all put some clothes on. All right. Valuable. Now, this is the part where it gets really ugly, and I don't know where my people are that have my pieces of paper, but now would be a good time. Okay, you're going to get a piece of paper, and we're going to do, this is the math portion of the program. I've had three different people come to me recently in the financial coaching that did not understand their car mortgage. So we're going to talk about this a little bit. Okay? And what we're going to do is we're going to walk through an activity together so you can begin to see what's a mortgage, what's a loan, what's an interest rate, okay? So column one says you have a car, you're 25 years old. This is the example. Maybe you're not 25 years old. Maybe you don't have a car. For the moment, pretend like you're 25 with a car. Okay, so you're 25 old, you have a car. You went and bought that thing with 4K down. I don't know how you got it. You sold your soul or something, but you had 4K and you put it down. So that car was $20,000. And you go, that wasn't much of a car. How much is a new car today? Anybody gone to look at them? There's 60, 70, $80,000. You could buy a house for that when I was in my 20s. Okay, I know. So I'm going to tell you, number one rule about car buying, never buy a new car. Never. Why? Because the minute you drive it off the lot, it cuts its value in half, and you ain't even put a mile on it. Turn around and drive it back, and they're like, I'm sorry, we cannot give you what you just paid for it. Right? It's called depreciation. So I tell people, don't buy new cars. Buy good used cars. So you went out, you're 25 years old, somebody, you listened to somebody, you paid $20,000 for a good used car. I don't know what kind it is here. I looked it up on the internet. I made it, but I didn't write it down, so I forgot. Okay, so that means if you put four down, how much is your debt? You financed how much? 16, that's the next row down, see it? You owe 16 on a $20,000 car. You were a fool when you bought it, though, because you finally go home and look up the blue book value. And what is it worth? $14,600. Somebody robbed you because you didn't go to do your homework first. If you don't know what the blue book is, Kelly Blue Book. When I go to buy used cars, I'm forever looking up the blue book value on them because I don't want to overpay for the thing. Okay, you got to do your homework. Everybody's got a phone now. You can go Kelly Blue Book right there on the used car lot, right? All right. So already the person's upside down. You know what upside down means? You owe more on it than you could get for it. So we're upside down, 25 years old, we're upside down. What's my interest rate? I must have had terrible credit because I'm at 22.5% interest rate. That's holy cow, outrageous highway robbery interest rate, right? It is. It's terrible. If you don't know, it's terrible. Okay. And I financed it for 60 months because I really wanted a low payment. Knowing my interest rate was high, I said, okay, I want it for 60 months. Now, you don't have to do this math. You can go Google calculators that are like car loan, and you put in the numbers, and they'll do the math for you. I did that. The monthly payment on that at 22.5% is $446. You see it? All right. Maybe you're looking at that going, I'd never pay a $400 car payment. Believe me, people pay huge car payments, practically as much as their house or their apartment. If you go out and find the right calculator, it'll tell you if you pay that loan off over 60 months, the total amount of interest you paid is $10,787. You see that line on your page? How much did you really pay for that 14,006 car? Okay, so how much is it? 20,000 plus my interest, total interest was how much? I paid $30,000 for a car that's worth 14,006. And you wonder how come people go broke. Because they don't look at their numbers. Okay, they don't look at their numbers. You've got to look at your numbers. All right? Then, so this person was really happy. They had a car payment of $450 or less. They were trucking down the road, very, very happy. Okay, but you know what they forgot to budget for? Taxes. If you look at your page, 2360, did you know you pay taxes on your vehicle every year? Every year! It's not like you pay it once when you buy it and you're done. Every year you pay taxes on it. So you got to budget for that. Okay. Then you got to have insurance. A 25-year-old male, I went and called my insurance agent to get this. And he's like, has this person been in an accident? Does this person drink? Did they get an edge? I'm like, I don't know, dude. 25-year-old. So finally he goes, oh, I don't know, about $160. So I plugged it in. This person has $159 a month insurance payment. By the way, if you're a girl, you're getting away scot-free because girls get a lot less on their, unless you've had a few accidents. Okay, here's the part nobody budgets for, maintenance and major repairs. You know why we don't budget for it? Because we are just absolutely driving down the road praying to God nothing breaks on this car. Anybody been there? You turn the radio up so you can't hear the U-joint clacking in the back. So you've got to budget for that. And when I say budget, I don't mean like put it in your and then like ignore it. I mean you've got to have a separate pool of money where you're stuffing money every month. Because guess what? You're going to need tires. Okay, so here I've got a point for you. How do you know when to change your tires? Again, I was raised in my dad's mechanic shop, so I thought everybody knew this. I had to learn that people don't know this. You ever heard of the penny test? Okay, for those of you that are yes, I'm sorry, I'm going to say this for those that don't know. Literally, it is called the penny test on your tire tread. The more your tire tread is worn down, the farther the stopping distance. So the older your tires get, the more you got to give room between you and a guy up there, because if you're going to hit your brakes, okay? So how do you know? You take the penny and you stick it down in the tread with the head down. Don't put the head towards the car because you can't see it like that. You got to put the head out so you can see it. And if Lincoln's head is showing above the tread, you need new tires. It's called the penny test. Now, y'all don't have pennies because y'all all got debit cards. So get you a penny and go check your tires, okay? All right, tires cost, right? Do you rotate your tires? This is the other thing. If people don't do that, then you're wearing your tires out unevenly and you have to replace them more quickly. People are like, well, how often do I rotate my tires? So I'm going to give you a secret. Every car has a manual. Every car comes with the manual. If it's not in your glove box because you bought it used off of the guy down the street and he let the dog chew it or something, you can go, Google knows everything. You can put your make, model of car and say, you know, manual, and it'll pop it up. The manual will tell you what your maintenance schedule is on that car. And so you cannot have any excuse. I don't care if you've never been around cars in all your life. Go read the flipping manual, and it'll tell you, change your oil this often, change your transmission fluid this often. You got belts, you got to change them ever so often. I don't know. I mean, I don't know as much as I would like to know. I went to my mechanic. I have a Toyota Tacoma 2008. It has 230,000 miles on it. And I'm driving that thing till it falls apart. It's paid for. It's my favorite kind of car to own. So I go to my mechanic and I'm like, timing belt. Don't those things wear out? And he goes, yes. And I go, shouldn't I change mine? I'm 200,000 miles on this vehicle. And he's like, let me look it up. So he looks it up and he goes, no, you have a timing chain. It's never going to wear out. I said, well, hallelujah. I didn't know I had a timing chain. So the one thing people do is they think, I can't ask. I'm going to look stupid. I'm not going to know what that guy's saying if I ask. Ask. And if you don't want to go to the mechanic and ask, we have a car ministry here. We can connect you with those guys. They can sit down with you, look at your car and go, yeah, you better sell this sucker. It ain't going to last. Or they can go, yeah, you need to do this and this and this and it's going to last you. right? So if you have no idea and you have nobody in your life to ask, come to the church. We have help. But if you just want to go figure it out, read your manual. All right, when I was growing up, the standard response was you change your oil every 3,000 miles or every 3 months, whichever comes first. Anybody get told that growing up? Do you know today that's not the exact answer? They have high-tech oils now that you can go a long ways, much farther than 3,000 miles. So again, if you don't know what oil's in your vehicle, you might want to ask the mechanic and figure out, when is it time to change my oil? When do I change my tires? When do I change my wiper blades? I'm the worst about wiper blades. I'm going to ride those things until they calcify, you know? So I have to get told every now and then, you need new wiper blades. Oh, I don't want to spend $20. Okay, so you got to do some maintenance on it. And you got to budget for it. Because most of the time, your budget is taken up with everything that you need to pay for. Many people have student loans. Many people have, you know, your housing is, you guys, your housing is terrible today. I don't know who I was talking to. Somebody, you'll raise your hand when I say this. And they said their apartment rent was over $1,000. I was like, my face fell on the floor. I was like, what? When I was growing up your age, an apartment was $350 and we divided it among three of us because we didn't want to pay it. And you guys are paying $1,000 a month. It takes my breath away. So you have to plan for your maintenance, because if tires come up and you can't afford them, mastering the possibilities on your MasterCard is an even dumber idea. I don't even have time to talk about that. You've got to save and be ready for these things. Okay, now we keep going. Notice it has regular maintenance and major repair. If you really save 600 times two at the end of the year, you'd have $1,200 in a savings account, right? And you might be tempted to say, I need a new pair of shoes. I think I'm going to spend that money on my new shoes. You know why you don't? Because the transmission goes out in your car and it's $2,500. You do not spend that. You let it build. You let that sucker build. Okay? Now, I did math on gas. You know, the average amount of miles on a car in the whole U.S. is 15,000 a year. That's the average. I don't know what y'all are driving. I drive about 13.5 because I work from my house. I don't have much of a commute, coffee pot to the desk, you know? So I don't have as much miles as some, but you guys might have more. But you got to do, in mileage, you've got to figure out what's my miles per gallon, how much is my gas. I've got a budget for this, right? Most people don't budget. They just buy gas when they need it, and they wonder why at the end of the month they're out of money. You got to budget. You've got to figure out, how many miles am I putting on my car? How much do I need to budget for gas? So at the bottom, did I put it in for you on yours? I didn't. So here, I'm going to tell you. By the time you do the math on all of those things, the car payment, the taxes that you got to plan for, the insurance, the maintenance, the major repair, the gas, the cost of that car every month is $864.46. Do you remember when Ryan talked last week and he said transportation needs to be a certain amount of your budget? If you don't know what your car is really costing you, you have no way to know, am I in budget or not? Does that make sense? Okay. So this person's 25. They bought this car. They're upside down. They're paying out the yin-yang on interest rates. Who's making that 10 grand off of them? The bank. Right? Okay. I joke sometimes. People say, do you own your house? And I go, only about 50%. The bank owns the rest. Because I still have about half of the amount of my house is in a mortgage still, which I pay off heavily every month because I hate the thing. The bank earns a lot of money off of me. All right, let me show you why the bank earns a lot of money off of you. At the bottom of your page is what's called an amortization schedule. Amortization. Most people have never looked at their amortization schedule. They hope that thing doesn't rise up to bite them ever. So I want to teach you how to read it. If you bought that car March 2024 and you're paying $446 on it, you see on the over here on the this column right here, it says monthly payment. That's how much you're paying. How much of that is interest? Look at your columns. Look at your March row. Which one is the interest? Of the $446 I paid on my car payment, how much did the bank make off of me? $300. Those buggers. Okay? I paid off a whopping $146. Go all the way to the bottom a year later, March 2025, I'm still paying $446 a month. How much of it is interest? $263. Why is it loaded that way? Loans are front-loaded. You know why they front-load them? Especially on cars. Because they know you're going to trade it off. You're not going to drive it 6, 7, 8, 9 years like me. I'm a cheap person. Most people, they get tired of their car. It starts to get old. They put way too many miles on it. It's rattling. The radio no longer drowns out the U-joint. And they go, we should trade this off. Right? And they trade it off before the loan is paid off. And so the bank has made all their money on the front end. You trade that sucker off about the time you're finally making headway on the note. And you get a new 60-month loan. And guess who's making money off of you? The bank. Okay? You're hemorrhaging money. All right, so this guy, my 25-year-old gal, whatever it is, a year later gets an offer from the loan company saying he could refinance because they've had such a good payment record for the last year, and the note's going to now drop to 10.5%. Should they do it?
Yes.
Okay, but you've got to do the math. You guys in your mind already said blah, 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 and you did it. If you don't know, let's do the math. Your payment, because you're going to 48 months, okay, I'm on 1 year later on your page. Go to that column. 1 year later, you go down to March 25. What do you owe on that car now? March 25 on your amortization schedule. Go all the way to the right. It tells you what is your principal on that car now. So fill it in your sheet. The amount owed 1 year later is $13,866. But you put some miles on this thing in the year, so you go look up the blue book value. Your blue book value, because of all the miles you put on it, is now $10,250. Are you upside down or are you good to go now? You're upside down still. Okay? But your interest rate's going to be 10.5%, so put that in that place. Your loan's not going to be 48 months, not 60 months. When you put all that into the loan calculator that's out there on the internet, it tells you your new payment is $252.60. Whoop, 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 right? Look how much money I'm saving. What is your total interest paid now when you've refinanced? It's $3,175. If you kept your old loan, you're going to pay almost $11,000 in interest. If you refinance, you're going to drop it to $3,175. Do you do it or don't you? You absolutely do it. You absolutely do it. Now, what do you do with the extra money that you're saving because your payment's so small? What's the thing to do? You keep paying. You pay double down on this new loan. This is the right answer. You now are saving $197 a month because you were paying $446 and feeling good about it. Now you're paying $252 and feeling better about it because you're a year older. You're a year wiser. But you double down with that extra. That $197 goes on that note over and over. So you still got the same budget. You're still strapped. You're still paying $864 a month for this stupid car that you're upside down on. But you're doubling down on that payment. Why? Because it's going to cut off a year and 7 months on your note. If you'll put $197 a month extra on that new note, it cuts a year and cuts it in half. You were at 48 months, right? Now you have a year and a half off. How long are you paying on it? 4 years. I take a year and a half off. Okay. I've almost cut it in half, right? Okay. Now you got the car paid off. What do you do now? Well, it's not looking so good because you got the car paid off, but it's worth about $5,000 now because it's been dropping all this time. It's a depreciating asset. All right. Here's what you do is you keep stuffing that money in your savings account. You're not doubling down on your note now, but you're taking $197 and $252 and you're putting it away. It takes discipline. It takes character. It takes intent. It takes focus. But if you do that, a year and 7 months later, your car's dead because you've driven it into the ground. last column on the far right. The last one says last column. Next 1 year, 7 months, you've been saving. You're age 30 now. Geez, you've been at this a while. Right? But now, because you saved diligently for that year and 7 months, you can put $8K down on a $20K car. You only owe $11,500 on it. Your interest rate now, because you've been so good about your payments and paid it off early, is 5.4%. You have gained significant ground in the credit card industry. Credit industry in general, right? Because you've been faithful on that payment and you paid it off early. They go, you're a good risk. We're going to lend you money and we'll lend you money at less because we think you're a good risk. So now you get a 5.4%. You do a 48-month note because you figured out 5 years financing a car is dumber than a hammer. Don't do it. And you can afford it now because now you got a better job. You got a raise. Your payment is now $268.50. Your total interest on this vehicle, $1,387. Which would you rather pay? 11 grand more for the car you're upside down in, or 1,300 more for a car that you're not upside down in? But it takes discipline and it takes focus. It takes reading your amortization schedule. It takes asking questions like this. Is there a pre-penalty amount? If I prepay it, is there a penalty? You ever heard of that? Prepayment penalty? You better ask. If you're going to get into a loan, you better ask them, if I pay it off early, do I get penalized? That's an important thing to know. You know why they penalize you? Because they ain't going to suck you dry on money. So they're going to charge a penalty because you didn't let them suck you dry like a tick. Right. So the reason I walk through this, whether you're buying a car, you're buying a house, you're buying anything that's going to require, you say, I cannot really afford this out of my pocket. I'm going to have to take a loan. Do you know why they call a house a mortgage? It's from the Latin root mortir, which means to die. A mortgage means you're going to pay on it until you die. That's what the bank hopes. They hope you're going to mortgage your life. Okay, so you got to be able to read it. Read your amortization schedule. Ask if there are prepayment penalties. Figure out how to double down on that car so you're paying it off early, and then be disciplined to save so that you can buy a vehicle 5 years from now where you're not upside down. You actually now have a real asset so that when you go to get your next vehicle, your car has trade-in value still. That's the goal. Clear? The math is not that hard. If you can go 10 grand, 3 grand, 13 grand, which do I want to pay? It's easy peasy to make that decision. What becomes hard is forcing yourself to sit down and itemize it so you can see it and go, holy cow. Now, my son was raised in my house where I run spreadsheets. I mean, if we're going to buy a car, if we're going to go on a vacation, if whatever we're doing, I'm like, what's the cost? How much do we need to save? And I'm like looking at it. I'm like a kind of a freak. But when my son got married, they were going to move from an apartment to another apartment. And they came to my house with a computer and they said, can we ask you some questions? I'm like, sure. And they whip up a spreadsheet. Ah, my heart just went pitter patter, pitter patter. I love you. Look at you go, boy. So he pulls up a spreadsheet and they have costed out the cost of the move. They costed out if there was going to be any savings. They costed out down pay. They did the whole thing and they said, we think we should move. What do you think? And I said, if you feel confident after doing the math, you should move. Because I don't have to tell them. They did the math. You see what I mean? And if that sounds so stupid, boring, let me tell you, God trusted you with this stuff. He gave you skill sets. He gave you a job. He gave you an education. Maybe he didn't give you an education. Maybe you're still working on that. Maybe you think you're earning it. But God gave you an opportunity. And then he said, now, use that stuff to show the world who I am, not who you are. All right, the same is true about a house. I don't have time to talk to you about a house. I'm going to talk to you briefly about driving a vehicle for income as delivery. And here's what I'm going to say. Don't do it. Here's why. I'm just going to real quick go to the math. If you average on a shift 100 miles driving your beat up old car that you have to go out and lay hands on and say, please, Jesus, let it work. Okay, you're going to put 100 miles in that car in a shift, right? The IRS will tell you you can get 67 cents a mile as a deduction if you drive your car because it's a work-related issue. That means the IRS, cheap buggers that they are, they think your car is costing you 67 cents per mile for maintenance, gas, whatever, right? So I drive 100 miles, 67 cents per mile is my cost. That means I've got 67 bucks that I had to lay out for maintenance, gas, whatever. Make sense? So out of the $100, out of the, let's say what I do there. Let's say I earn $17.50 an hour, which is above minimum wage, by the way, because I looked that up, because I haven't been at minimum wage so long, I couldn't remember. But if you, that means that on an 8-hour shift, you made 140 bucks. But the cost for that shift was $67. So now you actually only made $73 for that shift. You're down around 9 bucks an hour. I don't know what minimum, I don't know what wage you guys are expecting to earn, but putting that much wear and tear on your vehicle, it's never worth it. I've never seen it yet where somebody can drive food, Grubhub, Domino's, delivery, whatever, and actually make money. Because they never account for the wear and tear on their vehicle. And then when the engine blows up on them, they're like, I don't know, what am I going to do? We're like, you didn't plan for it. That's what you're going to do. You didn't plan, it's silly. I recommend you don't drive if you can avoid it. All right. How am I doing on time? Oh, I'm running short. Okay. Let's go back. Let's go down to the bottom, back around. Oh, where's my, hang on. We have to turn the thing back around. Here we go. The last thing I was going to talk about was your irreplaceable. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping me turn this back around. So we've talked about your inexpensive stuff. Don't buy the nicest thing. Don't buy the cheapest thing. Be moderate in your stuff that's replaceable. We've talked a little bit about the stuff you got to require, and mostly I focused on cars because most of you are not yet the age where a house is an issue. But if you are going to have a house, let me tell you up front, you better save for a down pay, because the more of it you mortgage, the more the bank is sucking money off of you like a tick. Okay? I bought houses and flipped them for a while. And I would always buy them as cheap as we could. We would always do the labor. We'd always repair the thing. And then we'd flip it. And we could make money, but boy, was it hard work. And we had to buy them smart. So buying a house, if you've never bought one, I'm going to encourage you to get somebody to sit down with you and run numbers. I'm going to encourage you to have somebody that knows how to buy a house to help you buy the house. Your first house buying is a little, it's intimidating. And you don't know what to look for. And you don't know how to read the inspection sheet that they go through. Or should you have an inspection? The market's so crazy right now. People are paying $10,000 and $15,000 over the asking price. No inspection. And my septic, when I bought my house, I had an inspection. I don't want to do that. The septic was $20,000 to replace it. And they wanted me, the sellers wanted me to half that with them. And I said, no. They'd had that market on that house on the market now for 18 months, and they want me to split $20,000 cost of a septic. I'm like, no, you want to sell it, you got to replace that septic. Take it out of the house proceeds. So have somebody help you buy a house, because if you don't know what you're doing, you can get talked into something, and it's not in your best interest. Okay? They're irreplaceable, and I'm coming in. I'll probably only have about another 5-10 minutes here. Here's the problem with irreplaceable. It's irreplaceable. I hate going to the gym. I just got to tell you, it's not my favorite thing to do in all the world. But I go every day. Why? This is the one body I get. This is it. I don't get another body. If I don't take care of this body and I end up with diabetes and all of those inflammatory diseases that come with that, my family is prone to dementia. And diabetes and inflammation is a direct precursor for dementia. I work like a crazy woman all the time to stay as healthy as I can because this is the only body I get. And on top of that, this is the temple where God dwells with me. As old and as run down as it is, this is where God dwells. And he dwells with you in your temple. The question is, are you taking care of your one irreplaceable asset? God's not going to give you another body. This is the one you get. He's not going to give you new family members. Those are your family. Those are the way. And I want to tell you, my family was a little rough. Maybe it shows through. Every now and then I've got some edges on me. But my family was a little rough. But even though it wasn't great at the time, I can look back now and say, what a blessing that God left me in a family that wasn't all that wonderful. It's the only family I'm ever going to get. Now, some of them are still a little hard to love. Maybe y'all don't have people like that in your lives, but I do. And do you know what? Has God done a work on me to teach me how to love the difficult people because he's left difficult people in my family and my life? Absolutely. I am a much, much better follower of Christ because I have difficult people in my family. If all my family was fabulous, I wouldn't have learned those lessons. That's the only family God's ever going to give me. I have to take care of those relationships. Now, some of them, I take care of them like this, and I keep them pretty far from me because I don't want the alcoholic person to knock on my door and tell me they need a loan and could I, and breathing fumes at me. I'm like, wow, no, no. So I have boundaries. You should have boundaries. But I also know better how to love better because I have difficult people. The other thing I'm going to tell you is when you get married, I'm going to say a when because most of you are not. That's the only spouse you should ever want. I know people get into it. People get divorced. I'm not pointing people, divorced people. I'm not finger pointing. But I'm telling you, it's a precious, irreplaceable relationship. It should be worth effort. You know, when they have the, what's the class they have here? What do they call it? The remarriage class? The you reengage. People go, oh, we don't need that. We're doing good. Do you know what? When you need to work on your marriage the most? When you're doing pretty good. Why wait until you're on the rocks to repair your ship? Let's fix that, baby. Let's work on a constant basis. The same is going to be true about some of your best friends. Now, friends are going to change. Friends actually are replaceable. Jay, Jane, Kelly, do you still have the same friends you had when you were in your 20s? No, I don't either. The people from my 20s, if it wasn't for Facebook, I would have never found them. And when I did find some of them, I was like, oh, geez, oh, my gosh. Thank goodness I live far from you. But you're going to change your friends. But while they are your support system, treat them as if they are valuable because they are valuable. I had a long conversation with Dr. Al Bean. Some of you won't remember him, but he's spoken on a couple of times in here before. And I said to him, you know, the funny thing is, as human beings, we're forever doing this. These are my people. We are a group. Those are not my people. Those people are wrong, right? And then we decide those people are probably not even really people, and we call them names. In war, they call them terrible names because in order to go out and kill somebody else, you have to make them a non-person. Do you see what I mean? We make people non-persons by the slang we use about them. And I said to Al, I said, the funny thing is human beings are so good about this is us. This is our clan. We're the right people. We're people. If those people were like us, then those people would be great. But they're not like us, so they're awful. We do this all the time, right? I don't care if it's about politics. If they don't like the burger the way you like your burger, there's something wrong with that person. Really, God says, ask this question. Who do I love? Not who's a person. Not who's a good person. Not who's somebody I want to be around. You ask the question, who do I love? Who does God love? He loves that person that has a totally different political persuasion from me. He loves my family member that is really difficult, right? He loves that teacher that you can't stand at school. My job is sometimes hard. I spend a lot of time talking to people who are 94 and 96, and let me tell you, their minds are wandering. Time is not the same meaning for them. But God loves that person at 94 whose mind is not with us very well. Do you see what I'm saying? And I have to remember and I have to take a deep breath and say, God loves this person. God loves this person. I'm going to slow down and love this person too. And I don't do it really well every day. I wish I did. I wish every annoying person that got on my phone, I loved them the way Jesus loved them. I'm not that good at it yet. But God is not done with me. Thank you, He's not done with me. And He's not done with you. So if you find yourself not caring for the body the way you probably should, you're eating crappy things and you know you shouldn't, you're not exercising, or you're over-exercising, or you're struggling with bulimia or anorexia or whatever it is, God still loves you. And He's not done with you yet. You just have to decide, how much do I love God? Because if I love Him enough, I'm going to start getting my life in an orderly fashion so that I can look like those people that when I met them, I said, that's someone who reflects God. Because see, when I go to my grave, I want to be somebody that reflects God, not somebody that's impatient on the phone or somebody who can't pay their bills because I've been profligate with my money. I want people to see God, not the excesses of me. And that's the end of my lecture. I got to preach in at the end. I'm kind of sorry I got on my soapbox. So if the musicians will come up and somebody will move that aside, I will pray over us. Father, You know that I am not everything I would like to be. And You know that I get up every morning and say, oh, help me. Help me. Because I am weak. I need You to heal my unbelief. I need You to make me more like You, because I cannot do it in my own strength. And I pray that over these people, just like I pray it over myself almost every day. Father, help us. You can do more in Your infinite wisdom than any of us can do by trying day after day after day. If You will just bring us into Your presence, we will not be the same. In Genesis, it says, You made all of these things, and it lists them all. And at the tail end, it says, and the stars also. Billions upon billions upon billions of stars. And You know them all by name. And You did it as an afterthought. And the stars also. And You love us? Oh, my God. Please help us be more like You so the world will see You. Because there is none like You. Amen.